Okay, we've had a discussion, and I apologize for that. We've had a discussion about Mr. Whitney's appearing as a witness. Mr. Smith, do you wish to document that or have that part of the record?
Yes.
My neglect. Okay, do you want to voice your objection for the record?
Oh, were we on the record?
Well, we were not. I just came in, and I neglected. Mr. Faraday addressed me, and I started into that exchange and didn't recognize we were not recording, so.
Yes, for the record, we would object to the calling of this witness. We don't find him on the expert witness list or any other witness list. I realize he's being called as a rebuttal witness, but I think he's going to be being asked to give expert testimony.
Okay, and I have already ruled off the record, and I'll rule here that Mr. Whitney can testify because he's a department employee, and second of all, this, and the major reason is this is rebuttal testimony, and witnesses for purposes of rebuttal I've never thought needed to be disclosed beforehand. So if you raise your right hand, Mr. Whitney, you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth in this matter.
I do.
Thank you. Please be seated. Mr. Faraday, you may examine Mr. Whitney.
Please state your name, please, and give your business address.
Robert Whitney with the Idaho Department of Water Resources, Western Region, 2735 Airport Way.
What is your position with the department, Mr. Whitney?
My position formerly is a senior water resource agent, and my area of responsibility is oversight of the regional well construction administration and enforcement program and the licensing of well drillers.
What experience do you have with well drilling and inspection of wells?
I have been the department's regulator for well construction in this region and also partially on a statewide basis since about 1989. So I've been out in the field on well rigs for 20 years.
Are you experienced in reading driller's logs?
Yes.
Are you experienced in various types of well construction, including drill and drive methods and other types of methods?
Yes.
I want to ask you some questions, Mr. Whitney, that pertain to the, among other things, the phenomenon of the construction of a number of wells in the Eagle area that are deemed to be or alleged to be replacement wells in the last few years. Are you familiar with the process of well replacement?
Yes.
Before we get to the replacement well question, could you describe how a well and well bore actually looks and how a well is sealed? And if you'd like, you may illustrate on the easel there or otherwise. I am interested in the question of distinguishing between sealed and unsealed wells, particularly wells that are sealed throughout their depth and those that are not.
Yeah, if I may, the best way for me to do that would be on paper.
Okay. And as you make your drawing, could you narrate for the record what you're doing and give an idea of what the various elements are that you're drawing?
Yeah, bring the easel and the tripod over here.
By the microphone.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Faraday, did you have some specific drilling processes in mind, or you would like a kind of a general overview? I mean, when we're talking about sealing wells, there's many ways to do that with different types of equipment, depending on the hydrogeologic setting that we're in. So,
let's start with air rotary drill and drive type wells, and as they are being constructed in this valley. And with regard to air rotary is a common method of drilling wells in this valley, isn't that right?
Yes, it is.
It's a common method in the Eagle area as well, isn't that correct?
Correct.
Also, the cable tool method is common in the Eagle area, to your knowledge, isn't it?
Yes, very common.
Okay.
And the two processes employ what you refer to as drilling and driving. So the real difference is the action by which the hole itself is created. However, the end product is very similar between a cable rig or a air rotary in drilling and driving.
Could you draw what that end product looks like with regard to this question of sealing?
I'm going to kind of draw just a very homogeneous geology for shallow surface gravels near the river bottom in this particular area, what I typically see as far as geology and hydrology,
which, you know, generally we have a horizon of soil which may vary between 2 feet thick to perhaps 10 feet or better, and then we'll have a shallow gravel aquifer, which, let's say this is sand and gravel, this will be our well bore. Below the sand and gravel we may have some confining layer, so we'll just call that C for player confining.
And I note that you put TS in the very top stratum, which is topsoil.
Mm-hmm. And depending on the target aquifer, which could be this sand and gravel, generally speaking for residential wells, a lot of people like to stay out of this because it's more susceptible to contaminants such as nitrate issues, bacteria issues, and that kind of thing. But we do generally have a water table in this sand and gravel. And let's just for general purposes say this sand and gravel generally, let's just say it's around 40 feet. It could be 20, it could be 60. It's about that variable throughout the river corridor.
And then from the surface down to the bottom of the sand and gravel, about 40 feet, let's say, for this example.
It would probably be a pretty good average in this area. Okay, so clay, sand, clay. Let's say this is our target zone for a well.
That's the lower zone that you've marked with an S for sand.
Correct. So let's call that production zone into a confined aquifer, likely. Yeah, but it's overlain by clay layers, so the potential would likely be different from that of the unconfined surface gravels that are directly connected to the river and the surface application of irrigation water.
When you say the potential would be different, do you mean that if you were to drill 35 feet into the sand and gravel aquifer, let's say that the water stands 10 feet below ground level, just hypothetically, but if you were to drill down into that production zone, the water might actually stand above ground.
Correct.
Or it at least would stand often above where it is encountered in the wellbore, correct?
Yeah, in many cases, especially down the river corridor, we see the potential actually increasing with depth, where you get down towards Star and Middleton at deeper depths. Then you have actually artesian flowing conditions that are very common. We actually see that in
and Eagle. You know, and I'm speaking fairly close proximity to the river bottom. As you get up on the bench, you may start losing this water in the surface gravel. The surface gravels may still exist up there, but they're not saturated. So the as you go north, you see increased depths of the wells and not as much. However, there can be, you know, where you have a lot of surface application of irrigation water, these gravels do have a tendency to get saturated.
As you go north, you get higher in elevation, so it's a farther distance to groundwater, correct?
Right, and we don't, up on the bench, generally see the flowing artesian conditions. However, that's probably more due to elevation than, you know, the water level still generally does rise.
Okay, thank you. Now, can you describe how a cable tool, let's say, well, would typically look in terms of a seal? And I'll represent to you that most of the wells that we have discussed in this hearing have surface seals only.
Yeah, as far, and I guess for me to differentiate between what constitutes a seal, it's the industry has in general for many years, even prior to me, may have looked at casing as part of a seal. In other words, it is possible to take a casing down in the ground and put it somewhere and use that as an exclusive barrier of a steel conduit to hold back some undesirable water that they didn't want to produce from the well. But our rules speak to seals as the placement of a impermeable material, a bentonite or a cement or some type of lower permeability material in an annular space. So as I talk about sealing wells, I'm going to kind of be talking about the actual placement of seal material in a space around the casing.
So this casing, generally speaking, will be a, let's, you know, 6 inch for your common household domestic well. And then we have what we term a surface seal. The minimum standards until recently have required 18 feet of surface seal. So let's say this is 40, this is 8, and so let's call that 18 feet for the surface seal. And that's generally in this environment created by a temporary casing that's installed because of the instability of the sand and gravels, which tend to cave unless they have something holding them open physically, which is this casing or this casing, in order to place this, let's just say, cement or bentonite around the well casing to prevent migration of fluids from the surface down alongside the casing, and that may influence the well or get into the groundwater itself. Now, in sedimentary conditions, we generally have unstable geologic units that tend to cave if they're not held open, as I said. So the process of drilling and driving to hold these open, there's a simultaneous advancing of the casing with the drilling process. So you have a drill stem that's inside here attached to the rig and a bit. Attached that generally drills, and we'll have a shoe called the drive shoe on the end of this pipe. The bit is small enough to fit inside of this casing. It can't do all of the cutting. Whether this is a rotary bit or a cable tool, it has to fit inside the diameter of the casing. And then the drive shoe is probably, well, we call this 5 7/8 on a 6 inch, and then probably 7 inches on the outside of
the drive shoe.
So the drive shoe makes a hole bigger than the casing itself so that the casing can slip down the hole, correct?
Correct. The purpose of the drive shoe, one, is to protect the end of the casing as it's advanced through these gravels, sands, to keep the end of the casing from getting damaged and also reduce the drag on the casing as it's advanced, so that if it has to be advanced to a depth, doing the same thing without a drive shoe, if you were able to get it through the gravel, which it can be done, but your casing tends to get tight the farther you have to go, because that friction is more because it's tighter around that pipe.
Okay, so how would the completed well look if it were done with that method and completed with screens in that lowest production zone, or an open hole in the lowest production zone? Would there be space between the casing and the bore hole?
We have a continuing line of objection on this expert testimony.
Sure. So noted.
Many things can occur outside of this casing that aren't very controllable through the process. What we're doing is injecting air down here in the air rotary scenario to cause a pressure differential to get the cuttings of the drilled hole to come out and allow this casing to be advanced through driving. So the drilled hole is made by a bit that's 5 7/8. The rest of it may be cut with this shoe as the casing is driven, either with a cable tool or an air rotary. That, you know, the more stable layers of these clay layers, they're not necessarily consolidated, but they generally stand open pretty well. So just for illustration purposes, we may end up with a larger hole through the clay than the bit created, and that's larger than the outside diameter of the 6-inch casing. While that may be a half an inch, it could be a half an inch. One of the other things that I have concluded that happens over the years of being on these machines is the more if this is a saturated sand and water, as you go through this clay layer and you start evacuating material from this zone as you go through, we tend to get somewhat of a comb created by evacuation of a lot of material, perhaps between a couple of clay layers, which in many cases I see this occur, and my conclusion is that when you lose the support underneath this clay, and this at one point this casing was up here being supported by that clay because the casing was advanced to it, and it wouldn't go through on its own, it had to be driven through because it was supported by this clay. What happens in many cases, this isn't very substantial, that evacuation of the material below the clay and the weight of the casing hammer and the casing string on that, what you'll see is this casing just fall. I've seen this many times over and over again, and my conclusion is that shows a breakdown of this confining layer. You know, this could fall off and we could have less confining layer. Now, what does that fill in with in the end? That there's no way to verify that either direction, whether it's space, sand, both, a little of one, a little of the other, probably, you know, it can occur differently in each situation. But ideally, what we have wanted to see in the end, because our rules and artesian conditions, we want to keep this water separate.
The upper water, the upper zone's
water. Unconfined, it's not the same because it has different potential. It's a water table aquifer as opposed to a confined or artesian aquifer. And in order to really keep that hydraulic
connection from occurring. The only way to do that is really put a seal in along that casing that we can positively verify got placed. Drilling and driving, you can't really do that. The only thing you can depend on is the very bottom here is this shoe being terminated in this clay layer and hoping that it created enough of a seal here to discourage influence from other aquifers above this zone. But if we carry this further through many more zones like this, the same thing can occur all the way down. And you may end up with somewhat of a isolation by the drive shoe and the casing in the terminal confining layer above the production zone. Everything else above has basically been interconnected just through the process because we've just disturbed everything on the way down, which, you know, it's not the fault of the process, it's just how the process works.
Is it common in your experience to see domestic wells drilled in this manner that allow water to move up and down in the wellbore outside the casing?
Yeah, I believe it does. I don't believe we've put anything in these types of wells that we can definitely say prohibits that and verified its placement.
When we have a well that essentially provides a conduit between an upper zone that has a decreasing potential with depth, isn't it a fact that water will run out of that upper zone along the outside of that casing down into lower zones where it finds some equilibrium?
Objection, reading.
You're probably correct, Mr. Smith. I'll allow a little bit of bleeding here. So this, I guess one of the reasons for this too is this information is not unfamiliar to me. Mr. Whitney actually has been a work colleague of mine. We've discussed these subjects together. Overruled. Go ahead, Mr. Faraday. Or Mr. Whitney, you may answer if you recall the question.
If I do recall the question, it was related to have we established some hydraulic connectivity between, say, an unconfined aquifer and a confined aquifer, whether this confined aquifer may have a lower potential, which is possible, a lower potential than this. In other words, the water level, when we encountered this sand, maybe it stands 12 feet below land surface, and this one stands 3 feet below land surface in the saturated gravel. In that case, we say the surface gravel had a higher potential, so the impetus for, if a hydraulic connection was established through the breakdown of this clay layer in the drilling process, well, certainly you can establish an exchange of water either one way or the other. And it depends on, you know, high pressure to low pressure, it's going to go that direction. And part of my investigations over the years of being out in the field with these drillers, my interest was, it's always been argued to me from the drilling community, people that employ these methods of drilling, that by advancing this casing down in the ground, everything goes back just like it was. And this casing itself is the seal. But what I have come to conclude over years and years of watching this and going into well replacements, when we issue a permit for replacement well, we require decommissioning of the well that's being replaced. So we have to evaluate the condition of that well and figure out what we need to do to put that subsurface back as close to the way it was before the well was drilled. And the reason we do that is because I assume that there's been quite a bit of disturbance through this drilling and driving process, which is the most common way to drill a well in most of this country,
always has been, that we have ended up with a hydraulic connection of some sort, whether the exchange is one way or another. And sometimes we can actually see that when we go into a well and perforate the casing so that we can inject grout to the outside of that casing in a well decommissioning. And what we do see is evidence on downhole videos, that kind of stuff, some that we've done and outside consultants. One of the real indicators is when you punch holes in this casing, the well may start to fill in with sand down at the bottom right away, which suggests, you know, there is an exchange occurring of water after you put the holes in the casing, which fills up the bottom. We have to be very careful we don't fill the well up prematurely in the abandonment process. So doing well abandonments and investigating that stuff has also led to my conclusions that we do end up with space on the outsides of these casings that we have very little control over through the drilling process.
What problems can unsealed wells cause to the well owner?
Well, it can make the well more susceptible to contaminants, because if it actually carries a hydraulic connection back towards the surface into waters that are more susceptible to contamination or may have contaminants, it's possible they can be interconnected that way.
Can it make the well less efficient in producing water, such as through caving or clogging of screens?
Yeah, it can. And the dependency in the drilling industry on these, which I'll call open bottom drill and drive wells, is landing and getting some amount of seal, you know, by this clay layer at the bottom of that pipe. And the driller will know whether that has occurred or not. If he gets down to this layer with that casing and the hole will stay open basically to this level, he's got a pretty good idea that that casing has landed in this clay at least adequately enough for enough time that he could actually install a screen out the end here for an intake. Once that's in, if we have a breakdown of this clay layer, we don't know. Now, if it's open bottom well and we have a breakdown of this clay layer, what tends to happen, and this can be for
just a minute, we have a tape that needs to be changed in. Okay, we are recording again. Sorry for the interruption.
In an open bottom scenario, you depend on this staying open to a certain extent, minus this screen, and the water enters just straight through the bottom of the well. Depending on the size of the sand, the efficiency of the well, transmissivity of that sand, our pumping rate is going to affect how this acts down here. And the faster you pump, the higher the velocity. So what you actually see is sand that starts moving up the casing. And this is something that we also see out. So let's say this driller didn't get a good landing in this clay layer when he took that casing down. The reason he knows that is because this stuff that has been interconnected has a tendency to come around and push up. I may end up
so pumping the well tends to excavate even more sand from outside the well casing, correct?
Well, in the original construction, if this occurs, he can't make a well there, really, unless he can figure out how to keep that sand from what they call heaving up the pipe. And the conclusion with, many guys I've worked with, some of the old-time well drillers out there, and if you landed good in that clay, you won't have sand come past the bottom of that pipe very much. I mean, maybe a couple inches or a foot where it could come up. That's not problematic when you go to put a screen out the end. If it comes up way high in here, what you end up with is so much inefficiency because of the sand packed inside that casing that the well just won't pump.
Do you see this with domestic wells in the Treasure Valley, this problem?
Yeah, I've seen this occur for numerous reasons. Some of them just flat-out orneriness, where a guy may know a guy drills an open-bottom well and sticks too big of a pump in there and sucks the bottom up. Just and honestly, that's occurred. But what I also in these, I think where you're going partly is related to when somebody calls me and says I got to replace my well. Is the well dry or is the well not? What I try to flush out is the difference between that question.
How often, when you receive that question, do you find that the well in fact is dry in the sense that there is not available water to move to the well? What kind of a percentage?
To a consumer, a dry well is something that won't pump water. And so a dry well, if it's not producing, it's dry for all practical purposes in their mind.
But does that mean that the aquifer levels have dropped?
Not necessarily. It could be a combination of things. If an aquifer level does drop to some extent, that means the stress on the intake of this well may increase. And aquifer is going to fluctuate year to year, sometimes even day to day, based on barometric pressure, that and all kinds of influences. But if we get in a condition where we're pumping more than the well wants to yield and we have to draw this water level down more to get that same amount of water, it's a compounding problem. More sand usually comes up inside the casing to the point you're either pumping it out the pump or the pump starts sucking air because it won't pump water. To a consumer, that's a dry well. If it doesn't pump water, it's a dry well.
To the consumer.
Sure. For my purposes, you know, when somebody says I have a dry well, I actually kind of want to know if, you know, we want to know as an agency if there are declining water levels to the point where wells are actually physically going dry and the water levels dropping that far.
Have you seen this happen in the Eagle area?
I have not.
How long should a well be expected to last, Mr. Whitney? There was some testimony earlier I'll represent to you about replacement wells, replacing wells that were recently that were drilled in the 1970s. How long do you usually reckon a well should last?
I think a well's longevity has a lot to do with its physical environment, soil chemistry, water chemistry, how it's used or not maintained properly. There's a lot of variables there, and obviously if a water table does drop, and we have areas where water tables have dropped and wells had to either be deepened or replaced because of lack of access to water through that well, you know, being pretty speculative as far as, you know, what is the life expectancy of a well, but if I had to put a number on it, In general, it's not uncommon to see wells last 20, 30, 40 years. I know of wells, I was talking to a gentleman yesterday that was working on a well that was drilled in 1950. However, he was working on it because it was failing. But that's, you know, quite a long life for a well.
Do casing materials have anything to do with the well's longevity?
I believe they do, and once again, that relates to how that geochemical environment acts on that particular casing. More and more we're seeing municipalities and entities going to casing wells with PVC because it's relatively inert to corrosive effects that can occur for many reasons, including stray voltage in the ground. You know, we don't generally have cathodic protection on wells, but we certainly do that with pipelines. Gas pipelines and stuff, so we know that those corrode under the subsurface.
What kind of a maintenance program should a diligent well owner carry out, Mr. Whitney, in your experience?
Well, there's only so much you can do. You know, generally most of that is well head protection. Make sure nothing gets in the well. You know, it's not in a hole where it has standing water around it. There's And don't overpump it. But
you know, wells tend to, they may get fouled with things like iron bacteria over time, which is a whole nother animal that fouls a well and reduces its efficiency and causes a pump to work more and the well not to yield water.
Do you know of iron bacteria problems in any wells in the Eagle area?
Well, I think they could be, you know, iron bacteria is a fairly common problem out there. It's a very common soil bacteria, so it's easily transported. And once you have it, you really don't get rid of it. You manage it through mechanical and chemical means of trying to keep it from producing slime, which is what fouls everything from the well itself to the pump and even in the house.
Can you give us a feeling for the number of domestic and small irrigation wells in the Eagle area? I'm interested in knowing, is this a fairly dense well field out there in comparison, say, to other areas in the valley, such as within the city of Boise?
I would say out in rural areas, they would the wells, the density of residential wells, small yard wells, that kind of thing, would be higher because there's less access to a municipal provider. Now, whether that was true before the municipalities came in comparing, you know, something in the city of Boise or on the outskirts with Eagle, I couldn't make a good comparison, but rural areas generally have higher densities of residential wells because of the lack of municipal service of some sort.
And that would be true for the North Eagle area, would you say?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing, though, is even out in Eagle, the tendency towards municipal, such as in the case of this M3. We're not talking about individual wells out there.
What percentage would you reckon that the domestic or small irrigation and domestic wells in the Eagle area have full depth seals outside their casing?
A very low percentage, less than 5%. Some of the larger diameter wells, that municipal wells, irrigation wells that used to actually intend to create a commingling of every water strata, from sometimes even including a surface gravel from top to bottom, that kind of construction went out the window in probably the early to mid 90s. So we have more control of public water supplies and the way they're constructed because of EPA and DEQ regulations as well. But drill and drive wells don't constitute wells that have full depth seals. They have 18-foot seal, which keeps water from traveling along the surface down alongside the case.
Are you familiar with any wells that have been replaced in the Eagle area? And if so, could you describe what you know about those replacements and reasons for them?
I deal with so many wells every year. I don't know that I could put a finger on one specific. I know there was along Beacon Light Road in proximity to the Idaho feedlot, what's Harvey or Hartley is a street that goes north off of Beacon Light, west of Ballantyne and east of Highway 16. We had some water testing that occurred out there for nitrates and some carrying agents for herbicides and pesticides. And I did deal with some replacement wells in that vicinity. The purpose of those replacements was to try to get better quality water at deeper depths. And one of the concerns we had is that some of these water quality issues with what was obviously connected to land use because of what the chemicals were, the indications were that those chemicals had been migrating deeper through the subsurface. Now, did we specifically attribute that to well construction in the end? I can't answer that. I don't think we did either way, but that's always suspect.
But that well was replaced because of contaminants, not because of efficiency?
Correct. Yeah, the ones I can think of in that vicinity, just
that I can kind of picture the house and being there were related to water quality issues.
Have you seen a replacement well in the Eagle area that you believe was necessitated by lowered groundwater levels?
I couldn't put my finger on one. It wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility. I couldn't say one way or another at this point.
Okay. Have you worked with Mr. Ed Squires of Hydrologic Incorporated?
Yes.
Do you find him to be knowledgeable and with regard to wells and well construction?
I do.
Do you find his approach to well construction and sealing of wells to be professional?
I do.
No further questions.
Okay. Mr. Thornton, questions for Mr. Whitney?